waving at the child. He's here.
He is.
How is he?
He's super, Ed. Yeah, he was loving your corridor. He's never seen such a long, straight space that he could just walk in a straight line.
Ed Rum. Up and down the corridor, was he?
Up and down, yeah, pacing. He was loving it.
I love it. He's getting, but that is, I mean, you can, it's funny watching Ed getting bigger. You're just seeing the passage of time.
It's incredible.
Moves so swiftly.
Yeah, I mean, how much he's changed in, like, really 13 months, you know.
But I think mums and dads tend not to notice as much as people like me who see the child every so often.
That's true, yeah. When you see them every day, I guess you don't notice. But it's when you look back at photos and you think, or when I hold a really small baby now, you think, God, like, you forget they were so
light. Yeah,
yeah. Because he's really heavy.
It's funny with the newborn babies. The first thing I always go, look at the fingers.
I know, I love their hands and feet. It's their feet, actually, I love.
Oh, yeah, the feet, little.
I love their little feet.
He's actually trying to get in the door here, but he's been taken away by security. So he's gone into a home, actually. He's completely gone. Now, Nina, you're welcome to the program. As always, lots to discuss. We'll get down to a bit of business, I suppose. Anything you can, I can get to put on a boil up in the nose. That takes us so far away from Ed now. What causes them? A boil inside the nose?
Yeah, you can get sores inside the nose. And the area just inside the nose in the middle is an area that we could refer to as Little's area. It's a very vascular area where there's lots of blood vessels near the surface. So it's an area that can bleed and get irritated. And quite often that's the area that's raw and itchy and we pick at it. A lot of people don't even realise they're picking at it. It could be in their sleep or anything. And it can get infected. So there is actually a prescription cream that we use that can be very effective for treating those. So do go along to your doctor because it can be very sore. There's not a lot of room in your nose for anything to swell. So any kind of swelling in there can actually be very tender.
So just get along and get it sorted out.
Yeah, it's an antibiotic cream, but it is on prescription. So
you need the note.
You do.
You need the doctor's note. My nearly five-year-old son has large itchy bites in his hair. So I presume on the head, is it? Yeah, I presume. His hair is very thick and he got bitten on his scalp and his leg when picking blackberries at the bottom of the garden. I'm also prone to insect bites, so I think he's inherited this from me. He's scratching his head a lot and I can only imagine it looks dreadful at school. Any recommendations as to how I can prevent him getting bitten or treat the bites quicker?
Okay, well, prevention from bites, unfortunately, I suppose I don't have a whole lot. I mean, if it's obviously if you go in an area where there are a lot of insects, unfortunately, you're prone to it. And there's all these theories as to whether different blood types or, you know, there are different things about different people that make them more prone to bites. Clearly, when you're traveling abroad, when we're talking about mosquitoes and that, wearing an insect repellent is very effective.
Yes.
If he has the bites again, there is a prescription cream that we use for bites. There is a steroid scalp application that might help take some of the swelling out of it, which will help the irritation. A simple thing like an antihistamine, which you buy over the counter, taking by mouth, can help the itch. So try those kind of things. But if you know you want to be careful again, if they're scratching, that they don't become infected. So just keep an eye on that. And if you're worried, bring them to the doctor.
Get it sorted out there. We have a call from Lisa now, Nina. So we'll welcome her to the program and say hi to you, Lisa. How are you?
Good morning, Ryan. Good morning, Dr. Nina.
Good morning, Lisa.
Okay, you have a question for us relating to a family illness.
I do, yes. My maternal grandmother died from ovarian cancer and my maternal aunt is currently battling breast cancer.
Okay.
And I know in the news there's been a lot of information about Angelina Jolie is a carrier of a particular gene that you can get tested, and same with Michelle Heaton. It's in the news a lot at the moment, and I know the two are related to each other, and I was just wondering if Dr. Nina could advise me as to should I go and get tested. I'm 36, I have two small children and also my sister.
Okay, do you mind me asking what age your grandmother was when she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer?
I'm not completely sure because she died 6 years ago. So I think she was in her mid-30s to late-30s. Like she wasn't, you know, in her 40s. Like she was mid.
And your aunt, what age is your aunt?
My aunt is in her 60s now. She's 65, 66 at the moment.
Okay, so obviously, you know, cancers can occur for any reason. And when we're looking at cancers, although there are a number of cancers that can run in families, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, bowel cancer can run in families. They can also occur in cases that are not necessarily genetic or related, which is why I asked their age. Now, your grandmother was very young and the younger ones are more likely to have a familial basis in some ways. Your aunt at 65 with breast cancer, like between 1 in 9 and 1 in 11 women will get breast cancer. The majority of those are in people over the age of 50, which is why we screen women of that age. So, you know, it's not necessarily a familial cancer. What you need to do is go talk to your GP.
Yeah.
Your GP can then just look at your whole family history. So looking back on both sides of the family, actually. And then they can actually refer you, depending on where you live. Most of the major units that treat cancer would have a what they call family history clinics, you know, particularly for breast cancer. They then bring you in and they actually look at your risk. And it really depends on what they think your risk is, whether they advise having genetic testing. Because obviously genetic testing has implications, because if you test positive, then what do you do? Do you, you know, do you have, as Angelina Jolie did, do you have a mastectomy? Do you have your ovaries removed? So it's not a decision that you take lightly. You can't go to your GP and say, please refer me for genetic testing. It doesn't work that way. Obviously, every woman should examine their breasts regularly, you know, whether there's a family history or not. So always keep an eye on your breasts. If you have any concerns, go along to your doctor and have that checked. And again, ovarian cancer is one of these things. It doesn't give a lot of symptoms. Thankfully, you know, it's not as common as we think, in that, you know, it can happen and it can run in families, but I don't want you to spend your life worrying that you might have it. But you can go along, your GP can do a simple examination, can refer you for an ultrasound to make sure that your ovaries look normal if you're very concerned. But do talk to your doctor. You have two people in your family, but whether your aunt was genetic or not is the question, and it'll depend how strong the risk they feel, how strong the risk is, whether they decide you go for testing or not.
Okay, thank you for that.
And tell me this, Lisa, when you see the likes of Michelle Heaton on the Late Late talking about these things, does it scare you or does it inform you?
No, informs me. Wouldn't scare me, no.
And are you
no.
glad to see somebody like her?
Absolutely.
Or Emma Hannigan, indeed, who we've spoken to many times. Yep. When you see that, you take comfort that, what, you feel less alone or less concerned in that sense?
Well, just informed. I feel informed. You know, I can now make a decision if, you know, that would never have entered my head. And I've known for a long time for, you know, that my grandmother died of cancer. And it was only watching a program, and I knew my aunt obviously has breast cancer. She's had it now for nearly 10 years.
Sure.
So it was only when I put two and two together from hearing these stories that I actually spoke to my mom and was saying, oh, how did your mother die? Like, and then when she said it was ovarian cancer, you know, I was putting two and two together. Yeah. But I'd never have known that. You know, even to consider it, that I should be talking to my GP about it, except for these women who have spoken out about it.
Yeah, okay, so it is that informative thing, which is good to know. And are you worried?
No.
You're not worried. You're okay about it. You feel that, look, it's okay, but the fact that you're informed protects you from the concern, I suppose. It stops you fretting when you're armed with the facts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried. If I was, I would already have beaten the path down to my GP,
of course
you know?
You would,
I'm not worried at all, but it was just, at my next visit to my GP, I was going to ask her for her advice. Yeah. So when I heard Dr. Nina was on today, I just said, quickly ring in and see what she would think, you know?
Well, I think it's really important. I mean, when a new patient comes to the practice, you know, and doctors are taught to do this, you ask about what's called family history. You always go through anything that runs in the family. And I always think it's a really good idea to be informed. There are a lot of people who just don't know what their grandparents died of, or, you know, aunts, uncles. And it's always worth having that conversation with your parents, with your aunts and uncles. And the fact is, most things are not genetic, but it's a good idea to know where you've come from, because it can predict where you're going to a certain extent. And also, there are many things lifestyle-wise that we can put in place to help reduce our risk of all these things. So if we know that they run in the family, you know, heart disease is one everyone thinks about, where they need to lead healthier lives. But actually, you know, lifestyle affects cancers. We know that diet affects, say, bowel cancer. And in fact, alcohol increases your risk of breast cancer. So, you know, there are always worth having a chat, always thinking about the various things you can do to stay well, of which maybe genetic testing is one, but clearly there are lots of other ways to reduce your risk of cancer as well. But it's great that we're having the conversation. I totally agree with you. The more we talk about things, the more informed people are, the more they can make the decisions.
How's your auntie doing, Lisa?
She's okay. Yeah, it's a long time, a long road she's on, you know, but she's okay.
Pass on our best way, will you?
I will, of course.
Okay, you have a good day. Thanks for taking the time to call the programme.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks very much.
Nice to talk to you.
Bye
for now. Bye-bye. Okay, let's say hi to Barbara, who's also on the line. Hiya, Barbara.
Hi, Ryan. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for talking to us this morning. You have a little fella aged three and a half, I should say. Very important to get that out. Yeah, the half.
That's right, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and he has started play school, and since he has started, he's started stammering in all his words and is getting completely frustrated with it. I'm getting a bit concerned about him, you know, especially the fact he's getting so frustrated.
How many brothers and sisters has he got?
He has five under him, so he's the youngest of six.
He's the youngest of six?
Yeah.
So he's five older than him, is what you're saying, yeah.
He does. Oh, sorry, five older.
Yeah. I don't mean to correct you, but just to clarify, And he started in play school, obviously, last week, was it?
On the 25th of August.
Okay, and when he came home, it was the first time he started with a bit of a stammer. Was it the first time you ever noticed it?
Yeah, first time we ever noticed it. Previous to that, every word that came out was clear. He never stumbled on a word even, but now he's really delaying in all his words. He's standing there like holding his face, getting really frustrated.
And does it happen if he's under particular pressure, or is he fine when he's relaxed watching a cartoon or something, or are there particular moments when his stammer's pronounced?
No, there isn't. It's just if he's trying to tell you something, it's like as if his mind is going quicker than his mouth and he just can't get it out. And he's starting now to calm down a bit. You know, I would go down to his level and just tell him, breathe, it's okay, take your time.
Barbara, hi.
Hi, Nina.
How are you? It's Nina. Actually, Ryan was being very good there. He's taking the words out of my mouth. He's right. The next question I had was, is this just when he's in the play school, or is he stammering at home as well now?
It's just at home. I haven't brought it to their attention yet. I didn't want them to think that, I was blaming the play school or anything like that,
Well, it is a big change for him, starting play school. And so I guess, there can be changes. And if he's been home all the time, this is a whole new atmosphere, new people. At a very simple level, if it's at home and at school, a very simple thing is, bring him along to the doctor, get his ears checked and stuff, make sure his hearing is okay, that he's, that he doesn't have any sort of issues in his mouth, teeth or something that are causing a problem. I suppose the actual psychology of it might be, Dave Coleman would probably be far better at answering this than I am, but it can be a sign of anxiety. They can run in families. Is there any history of stammering in the family?
No, not that I'm aware of. Yeah. All my other children are all fine. Yeah. They've never, had any sort of problem.
Would it have anything to do, the complete, busking here, but the fact that when you're 3 and a half and you're thrown into a whole new world order, that your head is trying to compute all of this and that makes somebody very, very kind of, and this is all happening and it's huge. And he's just processing it. And maybe when it settles, you just said a minute ago, Barbara, that when you go down to his level, it's only a week or so since it's changed. It's massive in his little world. Yeah. This is huge.
Exactly. That would be
huge
my advice.
Huge upheaval. Yeah. And it's just, with time, he'll just settle.
I'd certainly give it. I wouldn't be rushing off a week or two later. A lot has happened in his life. Yeah. I would definitely watch it, give it at least a month. Exactly. Encourage him to calm down and take one thing at a time, and that you're really listening at his level. The old thing, getting down to his level and say, what are you trying to say? Yeah. Show me. And I would say it to them, actually, in the creche, that you're a little worried that this is happening. So to make sure that same stuff is being done in the creche. But clearly, if it is going on, I always sort of say a month, 6 weeks is that cut off. If it is going on, go along, get him checked. They can always refer him on. And, speech and language therapists are excellent. The majority of cases, this is something very simple and it settles very well and they go on and they're fine. So my gut feeling is it will settle.
Especially as it's not...
I was just concerned it would just continue and get worse and worse.
Of course you are.
It's really bad at the moment, and it's not even that he's tired or, that I could put it down to that. It simply has just started since he started play school. And, and it's just him getting frustrated then. I'm scared he's going to stop talking.
Well, obviously, I can understand all those fears, and that is why, if it's going on a long time, do go along and get him checked. But I'm hopeful that this is just around the change. And as Ryan said, it is just so much going on in his life, and he can't articulate that, and he's trying to deal with all this. Look, as I said, if it's not settling, go get him checked. And speech and language therapy is excellent; works very well at that age, and can be very helpful.
I think you're right. Give it time, and with any luck, he'll just readjust, and you'll get your little fella back, and he'll be chatting away too much and he'll be annoyed with
him. That's it. He's always been chatting too much.
There you go.
He knows how to shout anyway to get everyone's attention.
Well, he does if he's got five above him. He has to if he wants to get his nose into the trough, Barbara.
Yeah, and that's what I thought when he'd start play school. He'd have no problem, but they're obviously not listening to him and he's getting frustrated.
Yeah, well, that's it. He's now in a new world order. So good luck with it all. Yeah. I hope it all works out for you. Keep us posted,
thanks,
won't you?
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Barbara.
Yeah, I will, of course. Yeah,
all right, Barbara.
Thanks a million, Dr. Nina. Thanks, Brian. Thanks.
Not at all. Bye for now. Okay, 5155. I mean, a stammer is a curse. It's a really hard thing, especially in adulthood. Have it. You might talk to people and they have this, particularly if it's very pronounced, and you have to ask yourself, do you finish the sentence for them, which I believe you don't.
No.
You just let people go on, I suppose. And then the next thing is, How do you fix it? I mean, it's a terrible thing to as an affliction.
It must
people.
Be. I mean,
and for confidence and everything else.
Exactly. I mean, the person who has it is the one who suffers the most because it affects their confidence, their ability to stand up and sort of be heard because they're so afraid and so embarrassed. And of course, the more anxious they are, the worse it gets quite often. So the combination of psychological therapy and speech and language therapy, and there are all these various modes of speaking now where they learn to breathe as they talk, and that can be really helpful. But it is difficult, and that's why I do always believe in early, you know, going along and getting checked. But as you said, you know, with any symptom, whether it's something psychological or physical, I would never rush off after a week, 10 days, you know, unless obviously it's something critical.
Anne in Monaghan says, speaking of tongue-tied, I have a four-year-old who's having real problems being understood, has lots of difficulties with certain sounds, attending speech therapy, but sorry, there's just no punctuation. So, so he attends speech therapy, but no real improvement and can't lift his tongue up properly. Should he have it seen to surgically?
Well, if he has genuine tongue tie, yes, they do. Now, it's often picked up in very young babies and it's very easily treated in a very young baby. They actually, you know, they clip it really, you know, as an outpatient. There are some GPs around the country who do it.
They clip it?
Yeah, they can just... Your tongue tie is when basically at the bottom of the tongue you can see that it's too tight and they can't lift it or they can't put it out of their mouth properly. And you can... A lot of young babies will present with difficulty feeding, that they can't latch on properly when they're feeding.
Okay.
And there are a number of GPs trained actually and I know some dentists around the place who do it, and if they're very young, it's very simple. Obviously, when they're older, that needs to be done under anaesthetic and stuff. So do again go to your doctor who can refer you to a specialist who can see, is it actual tongue tie? The speech and language therapists are usually, you know, they'd usually watch out for things like that. They'd be quite good at looking in the mouth and making sure there's no actual impediment to speech as well. But it is sortable if it's tongue tie, so do go get it fixed.
And my daughter's five, says Olive, and for the last few years she's complained of pains in her tummy. Last few years, at five, okay. The doctor said they couldn't find anything wrong. It doesn't seem to be anything she's eating, as she can often have it first thing in the morning. Yesterday she came home from school with it. It comes and it goes.
Okay, so we talk about a thing called acute non-specific abdominal pain in children, or people talk about what's called abdominal migraine in children. Children often localise pain to their stomach. So you have a child who has a fever and they'll tell you they have a sore tummy. They localise stress to their stomach. If they're feeling worried about something, they hold their tummies and they're sore. So it's quite normal. Obviously, you've gone along and made sure that there's nothing wrong there, nothing needs to be treated. Constipation is a really common cause in children, and I would always stress that, because they can be going to the toilet every day but they can still be constipated. So it's about looking at the consistency of the stool, which I know is not a conversation a lot of people like to have, but it should be more like toothpaste than pellets, okay? And that's what we're looking for.
And mothers don't care about that sort of thing for their kids, do they?
But they should, because actually it's a really common cause of abdominal pain.
They don't mind investigating is what I'm saying.
Mothers never mind. The kids, when I talk to a six-year-old and say, what does your poo look like? They think it's hilarious. But if no cause has been found and if they're otherwise well, I would just, when the tummy pain comes, give them a cuddle or whatever, you know, encourage them, say, look, this, you know, it's going to go away. Come on, we go and do something. Distraction often works quite well for that kind of pain. And if they can roll on and be distracted and the pain settles, then I wouldn't worry about it. They do tend to grow out of it as they get older, if it's that sort of abdominal migraine or a non-specific abdominal pain.
Good. Nina, I'm a 43-year-old woman, and over the past month, I found a small lump in my breast. I went to my doctor. She said, I have lumpy breasts, but I'm not entirely happy with that. So what should I do?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to refer lumps in breasts anyway, particularly in that age group, you know, especially again if you have a family history or are there any other risks at all. We have really well organised breast services around the country, that the breast clinics, publicly or privately, you have great access. If you have a single lump and you're over the age of 35, they will see you within 2 weeks. If you have generally lumpy breasts, then it's felt, you know, GPs do know examining this. You get the sensitive, the breasts feel exactly the same on both sides and general lumpiness. We often still refer and you'd be seen within 12 weeks. So if you're not happy, go back to your doctor, go get a second opinion. I'm sure they can refer you on. And if it's reassurance you need, hopefully that is what you will get. But if you have a lump that you're worried about and it's not going away, don't ignore it.
OK, and that is where we're going to leave it for today. Nina, thank you so much for your time, as always. We talked about autism yesterday. I don't know if you've seen Guardians of the Galaxy with your gang, did you?
I haven't, no.
This character Drax in it, who doesn't get metaphors, and this blogger was writing about the fact that he brought his brother, who's on the spectrum, autism, to see it.
Okay.
And the brother completely related to this character, isn't it?
Yeah.
Completely related to the character, and said, that guy is just like me and he's a superhero.
Isn't that lovely that's the character is in it? Yeah,
it just happened to be. So we don't know whether Marvel, the company,
did it on purpose.
Precisely. Or whether it just happens to have been a phenomenon that arose from...
I'd like
from
to think that they did. You know, they do put these kind of things into films a lot. And isn't it great? Because I think it's so important that everyone can... we all have characters we identify. Quite often they're people we'd love to be, as opposed to that we are.
Aspiration rather than confirmation. Yeah. Okay. Nina, enjoy your day with Ed and the rest of the gang.
Yeah, the kid's gone back to school date.
You've got a lunch date.
Yeah.
With your husband.
My husband and my son.
And your son. He's kind of... Ed's a bit of a gooseberry this morning, is he?
He's a bit of a gooseberry all the time now since he's
I'd say, that's for another day. Nina, thanks. Enjoy your day.
All right, thanks.
Good morning, Caroline.
Hello. Good morning, Ryan.
You're fighting off a terrorist, Jack Russell.
She's not, actually. She's a darling little thing, but she's a special blend.
What type of dog is it?
A special blend.
Of what?
Of several things, I'd
say. Heinz 57.
She's a bit Bichon Frise and a bit Shih Tzu, and I'd say there's a bit of terrier in there as well. Yeah, she looks like a little fox.
She's like a selection box of canine genetics. Okay, so you called to say what?
I rang in after that lady said about the poor little 3.5-year-old.
Yeah, who's developed a stammer out of the blue, yes.
Yes, exactly. My second child, I have four now, but number two, when she was about 2.5 and my third child was a few months old, she started to develop a stammer as well. And it was very sudden, and it was absolutely halting her. She had been chatting for ages. She was very, very young to speak, and all of a sudden she couldn't get her words out of her mouth. And it was really pronounced. Like, she'd start the sentence with and then she'd say to me, "I can't talk." But I was concerned about it, obviously, because it's, you know, you don't want them to have any of these really obvious things that you can possibly handle quickly. So I headed for the public health nurse. And our local nurse here is just amazing. And she did the hearing test and everything. That was all perfect. And she said, generally, something that appears so suddenly like that is stress-related and probably the baby's fault. Right. Poor Baba.
Yeah.
So she said the speech therapy list is like 18, 24 months long.
Yeah.
Now she said, I'll put her down for that if you want, but... that maybe if it's something that sticks in or that you're concerned about, you might like to, you know, go privately and get a speech therapist and see. So I rang the Speech Therapy Association of Ireland, and the lady who answered the phone was incredibly helpful.
Good.
And she just asked, you know, the briefest few questions. When did you notice it? Anything new in the child's life? And she said, what do you do when she stammers? And I said, well, I'm being very patient with her. And I tell her, you know, take your time. It's okay. And da, da, da. And she said, yeah, that's exactly the wrong thing to do. Basically, if it's stress related, you know, if it's something that has come on very suddenly, generally what you should say is, my words get stuck too. Come back to me in a minute.
Oh.
Because then you're removing the pressure situation. Because if you tell them, it's okay, mommy's prepared to wait, they're still under that pressure to tell you what the thing is that they can't say.
You could be making it worse by saying, yes, you're okay, go on,
exactly.
Take your time, looking at them. It's like trying to, you know, watching somebody go to the, you know, trying to have a pee, you know. Go on.
Well, you're keeping the pressure on, yeah. Whereas if you say, oh, my words get stuck like that too sometimes, and you turn your back on them, and it gives them that break where they feel, okay, I don't have to say it right now, and all of a sudden they're able to say it. Now, that's obviously not going to fix every stammerer in the world, but
it's worth a punt.
That this is something worth trying, especially with a child of that age where there's something new in their life and it's possibly just an anxiety-related stammer.
Yeah.
And it worked with my daughter within a fortnight.
I'm not surprised. Okay, good. Sage advice. Caroline, thank you for joining us with that. That's really good of you.
You're very welcome.
And enjoy the rest of your day, for the love of God, won't you?
I will indeed.
Okay.
Thank you, Ryan.
See you next time.
Bye
for now. All right. Well, that's Caroline on that. Loads in on stammer, on the world of stammering and the stammer. So we might get into that at some point, because it seems to be not just adults, but children as well. We'll have a look at that too.